Well, hello again, little ones. Today we have our study once again from Born and Raised. It's October 1st, 2023, and the time is 20:53 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green, and I'm glad to be with you. I hope you're doing well. The Chapter 7, Paragraph 12, final part, final paragraph of Chapter 7, is our intended study for today from Born and Raised. And I've been rereading Chapter 12 of the Crucible article, the Crucible of Credible Creed. The Holy Grail of Biblical Archaeology is what the Crucible is representing. And that concept is a concept that was original to me, but other people have copied this idea of the illustration of the Holy Grail more frequently ever since the article was published. But Chapter 12 talks about the judges and how we get a chronology from the book of Judges, and that is from the judges of Israel, which are very poorly understood as far as chronology goes in the world in general. So that's something I was reading today and studying at greater length. And isn't styrofoam one of man's great inventions? I don't think quite accurately. It's hardly one of man's great inventions. There's no way to recycle styrofoam, apparently, and it's used in so many products, such as fragile displays that are, you know, that are shipped in giant boxes with huge clamshell shaped styrofoam pieces, and no way to recycle. It's just a great disappointment to me, all the styrofoam that I have to dispose of and try to. And I think it's poisonous when you break it up. You have to be wearing some kind of breathing protection. It's a lot of poisonous gas. It's horrific. It's not a nice substance. Quite a bad substance to try to recycle. The importance of the Messiah. Born and Raised, Chapter 7, Paragraph 12. The importance of the Messiah is as something provided to all mankind to recover from the sin of Adam and Eve, what they lost, which is the hope of everlasting life. It's nothing more than that. That's the idea from the Bible itself. The time of Messiah's arrival, of course, the Messiah performs a lot of important tasks, important roles. The time of Messiah's arrival was in addition to other means of identification provided in the earlier Bible, such as the prophecies. The prophecy of Daniel 9:24-27 assisted us in learning that the years 26 CE and 30 CE best fit the years that were expected for his baptism and crucifixion. But the views presented by other scholars are numerous and do modify one or more of the dates that we have revealed. We found that 26 CE fit very well for the baptism of Christ and 30 CE for the crucifixion. But one example of these other views is that some scholars take the ministry of Jesus as being only 2.5 years and prefer 46 full years for that period after Herod's year 18 until the first Passover of Jesus' ministry, the latter date of which they place in 28 CE. Which it means the first Passover of Jesus' ministry they place in 28 CE. Meaning that they accept King Herod's 18th year as late BCE 20 or early BCE 19, which is before the Common Era, 20 or 19, with Jesus' first Passover of his ministry being 28 on the other side of the Common Era. So it's a difference of about, like we said, 46 full years, to be precise. Among these, we see, now this is a differing view from what our view is, but among these, we see both Mr. Chadwick and Mr. Blinsler. Their reasoning doesn't affect the year 30 CE given by both of them, and by both them and us, as the crucifixion year. But it gives the possibility of taking year 1 of Tiberius as 14 CE, which is one of the fairly common beliefs in the secular world, because 14 CE was the death of Augustus, therefore the first year of Tiberius. Whereas we considered it to be the co-rule, the beginning of co-rule of Tiberius in 12 CE. As year one for Tiberius. Now, the half of the week of Daniel is better. The words half of the week in quotes. In our view, it's better with 26 CE and 30 CE as start and end of his ministry, which puts the first Passover in 27 CE and not 28 CE. There appears to be no scientific argument either way, and still the need for the fulfillment of Daniel wants to be viewed as primary for the acceptance of Messiah. And the evidence is that Jesus was believed, actually. We know that he had significant numbers of believers. This is crucial, even in his own time, he had believers and apostles and disciples. This is crucial to the messianic story, and any reason to reject a contender prevails over one to accept him. So if they can find a good reason why Jesus should not be called the Messiah, then that would destroy their faith. Thus, we think that Jehovah shares our viewpoint here, because the half of the week is 3.5 and not 2.5, a week being 7. So a believer opts for the former. We would think that since there was supposed to be an event happening at the half of the week, that therefore, you know, that at the half of the week, the Messiah was to cause sacrifice and gift offering to cease, as Daniel's prophecy said, then his ministry should be 3.5 years, not 2.5. Ignoring Daniel's half of the week is not preferred, because a fulfillment of this prophecy, as also of all the messianic prophecies, there are many other messianic prophecies. We can't cover them all right at this moment. And that fulfillment is, for us believers, crucial. Attempting to say that the details don't matter fails. Right? Because if we can find one reason to reject Jesus as Messiah, we don't have to believe anymore. It takes us, you know, into a much easier path for life if we don't have to believe. Scholars continue to study this even when they agree. Even when they agree with each other, they still continue to study it. They're so intent on trying to ascertain whether it's really true or if they can find any fault at all with it. They're so fastidious. They're so diligent. Scholarship coming from a doubting viewpoint is false, because doubters can't even believe their own results. So you can't start from a point of view of being a doubter and expect that you're going to do research. You won't do any work if you're a doubter. You'll just abandon, because you can't latch on to any fact if you're a doubter. The commonly accepted view, I mean, if you're doubting everything, you can't do anything. The quote-unquote commonly accepted view from the time of Eusebius, who lived from about 260 to 340 of the Common Era, that's about 1,800 years ago or something, until 1905 of our era, which is a difference of about a millennium and a half. In that time period, is the quote-unquote commonly accepted view is a ministry of Jesus that exceeds 3 years. So it's been common to believe that for about a millennium and a half in between, or up until 1905. 1500 years up until 1905, it was common to believe that Jesus' ministry was more than 3 years. It is neither reasonable nor possible to refute all of the potential or popular contrary views. We have been given free will, all of us, whether we want it or not. Occam's razor supports any view that is simply bright. The simplest view is usually the correct one, according to Occam's razor. But all of us have free will, even if we don't want free will. So even if we want to just be told what to do or be told what's right, we don't have that option because we have free will. Even if we don't want to, we have to figure out our own choice. We have to make our own choice because we're given free will. We don't have an option. We have to find out what we believe. But we can't refute all of the popular contrary views to what we believe. It just wouldn't be possible to do that in every case, because we'd have to do that in every situation with every possible belief that we held and so on. But we've been given free will. We can make a choice. And in fact, we're obligated to do that. We don't have a choice about the fact that we have free will. It's quite a shocking realization to realize that we have free will. And we are necessitated, or it is a necessity for us to make our own choices because of that when we become adults. Our scripture for today is from Song of Solomon, chapter 8. It's a writing of Solomon, but it's not the Proverbs. It's Song of Solomon, or Canticles, as it's called. Canticles, chapter 8, verse 7. Many waters themselves are not able to extinguish love, nor can rivers themselves wash it away. If a man would give all the valuable things of his house for love, persons would positively despise them. Many waters themselves are not able to extinguish love, nor can rivers themselves wash it away. And love, in fact, is the basis for every facet of the religion of the Jews and the Christian religion. Love is the primary characteristic of Jehovah. God is love. He is the personification of love. We're going to look at our next reading now, Joshua 19. So we're still talking about the dividing up of the land here. This is an extensive, detailed chapter. Then the second lot came out for Simeon, for the tribe of the sons of Simeon by their families, and their inheritance came to be in the midst of the inheritance of the sons of Judah. And they came to have in their inheritance Beersheba with Sheba, and Moleda, and Hazar Shual, and Bela, and Ezim, and Eltolad, and Bethel, and Horma, and Ziklag, and Bethmarcaboth, and Hazar Susa, and Bethlebaoth, and Sheruhen, 13 cities and their settlements. Ain, Rimmon, and Ether, and Ashan, 4 cities and their settlements, and all the settlements that were all around these cities as far as Baalath Beer, Ramah of the south. This was the inheritance of the tribe of the sons of Simeon by their families. The inheritance of the sons of Simeon was out of the allotment of the sons of Judah, because the share of the sons of Judah proved to be too large for them. So the sons of Simeon got a possession in the midst of their inheritance. Next, the third lot came up for the sons of Zebulun by their families, and the boundary of their inheritance came to be as far as Sarid. And their boundary went up westward also to Mariel and reached to Dabasheth and reached to the torrent valley that is in front of Jokneam. And it went back from Sarid eastward toward the rising of the sun to the border of Kisloth Tabor, and went out to Dabarath, and went up to Japhia. And from there it passed over eastward toward the sunrise to Gath-Hepher, to Eth-Kazin, and went out to Rimmon, and was marked out to Nea. And the boundary went around it on the north to Hanathon, and its terminations proved to be at the valley of Iphtahel, and Katath, and Nahalal, and Shimron, and Idala, and Bethlehem, 12 cities and their settlements. This was the inheritance of the sons of Zebulun by their families. These were the cities and their settlements. Looks like a different Bethlehem from the one that we know, which was in the tribe of Judah. And it was for, verse 17, for Issachar that the fourth lot came out for the sons of Issachar by their families. And their boundary came to be to Jezreel, and Kesulloth, and Shunem, and Hapharaim, and Shion, and Anaharath, and Rabbith, and Kishion, and Ebez, and Remeth, and Enganim, and Enhada, and Bethpazaz. And the boundary reached to Tabor, and Shehazuma, and Bethshemesh, and the terminations of their border proved to be at the Jordan. 16 cities and their settlements. This was the inheritance of the tribe of the sons of Issachar by their families, the cities and their settlements. Then the fifth lot came out for the tribe of the sons of Asher by their families, and their boundary came to be Helkath, and Haley, and Beten, and Akshaph, and Elamelech, and Amad, and Mishal, and it reached westward to Carmel, and to Shihor Libnath, and it went back toward the rising of the sun to Beth Dagon, and reached to Zebulun, and the valley of Iphtahel to the north, to Beth Emek and Ael, and it went out to Cable on the left, and to Ebron and Rehob, and Hammon and Cana, as far as populous Sidon. And the boundary went back to Ramah, and as far as the fortified city of Tyre, and the boundary went back to Hosah, and its terminations came to be at the sea in the region of Akzib, and Ammah and Aphek and Rehob, 22 cities and their settlements. This was the inheritance of the tribe of the sons of Asher by their families. These were the cities and their settlements. It was for the sons of Naphtali that the sixth lot came out for the sons of Naphtali by their families. Their boundary came to be from Heleph, from the big tree of Zaananim, and Adami-Nekeb and Jabneel as far as Lachem, and its terminations came to be the Jordan, at the Jordan. And the boundary went back westward to Asnoth Tabor, and went out from there to Hukok, and reached to Zebulun on the south, and to Asher it reached on the west, and to Judah at the Jordan toward the rising of the sun. And the fortified cities were Zidim, Zer, and Hamath, Rakath, and Kinnereth, and Adamah, and Ramah, and Hazor, and Kedesh, and Edri, and Hazor, and Yiron, and Migdalel, Horem, and Bethanath, and Bethshemesh, 19 cities and their settlements. This was the inheritance of the tribe of the sons of Naphtali by their families, the cities and their settlements. It was for the tribe of the sons of Dan by their families that the seventh lot came out, and the border of their inheritance came to be Zorah, and Eshtaol, and Ershemesh, and Shealabin, and Ajalon, and Ithla, and Elon, and Timnah, and Ekron, and Eltekeh, and Gibbethon, and Baalath, and Jehud, and Benabirak, and Gethrimmon, and Majarkin, and Rakon, with the border in front of Joppa. And the territory of the sons of Dan was too cramped for them, and the sons of Dan proceeded to go up in war against Leshem, and to capture it and strike it with the edge of the sword. Then they took possession of it, and went dwelling in it, and they began to call Leshem Dan, according to the name of Dan their forefather. This was the inheritance of the tribe of the sons of Dan by their families. These were the cities and their settlements. Thus they finished dividing the land for a possession by its territories. Then the sons of Israel gave an inheritance to Joshua, the son of Nun, in their midst. At the order of Jehovah, they gave him the city for which he asked, namely Timnath-Serah, in the mountainous region of Ephraim, and he began to build up the city and dwell in it. These were the inheritances that Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun, and the heads of the fathers of the tribes of the sons of Israel, distributed as a possession by lot in Shiloh before Jehovah at the entrance of the tent of meeting. So they left off from apportioning the land. That was the apportioning of the land. That's the end of Joshua 19. They did it in Shiloh, where the tent of meeting was now established as a place for Jehovah to reside in Israel after their conquest. And here they were dividing up the land, and they gave to Joshua some city in the mountainous region of Ephraim. And if we look back at the part of Numbers, maybe I can just give myself a little bit more visibility here. There we go. Let's see what I can do here, so I can see what I'm looking for here. From the book of Numbers, chapter 13, if we look at when they spied out the land, we can always go back to Numbers chapter 13 and look at that. Of the tribe of Judah, we see Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. He was one of the spies sent out. But also in the next verse and plus one to the eighth verse, of the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, the son of Nun, that's Joshua, the son of Nun, he was of the tribe of Ephraim. So it's correct that he would get a city from the lot, the allotment of the tribe of Ephraim. And that's what happened, as we just saw in Joshua 19, which we just read. Joshua got the city called Timnath-Serah in the mountainous region of Ephraim. So, I mean, it's, we can keep on examining the Bible to see just how accurate or how consistent it is, and we can gain more knowledge about the Bible as we read it, and then we can, you know, be better equipped to decide how true it is and how much we should rely upon the Bible in other respects, such as in the case of the belief in Jesus. Romans chapter 13, let every soul be in subjection to the superior authorities, Paul writes to the Romans, for there is no authority except by God. The existing authorities stand placed in their relative positions by God. Therefore, he who opposes the authority has taken a stand against the arrangement of God. Those who have taken a stand against it will receive judgment to themselves. For those ruling are an object of fear, not to the good deed, but to the bad. Do you then want to have no fear of the authority? Keep doing good, and you will have praise from it. For it is God's minister for you, or to you, rather, for your good. But if you are doing what is bad, be in fear, for it is not without purpose that it bears the sword. For it is God's minister, an avenger, to express wrath upon the one practicing what is bad. There is therefore compelling reason for you people to be in subjection, not only on account of that wrath, but also on account of your conscience. For that is why you are also paying taxes. For they are God's public servants, constantly serving this very purpose. Render to all their dues, to him who calls for the tax, to him who calls for the tribute, to him who calls for fear, such fear, to him who calls for honor, such honor. Do not you people be owing anybody a single thing except to love one another. For he that loves his fellow man has fulfilled the law. For the law code, you must not commit adultery, you must not murder, you must not steal, you must not covet. and whatever other commandment there is summed up in this word, namely, you must love your neighbor as yourself. Love does not work evil to one's neighbor. Therefore, love is the law's fulfillment. Do this too, because you people know the season, that it is already the hour for you to awake from sleep. For now our salvation is nearer than at the time when we became believers. The night is well along, the day has drawn near. Let us therefore put off the works belonging to the darkness, and let us put on the weapons of the light. As in the daytime, let us walk decently, not in revelries and drunken bouts, not in illicit intercourse and loose conduct, not in strife and jealousy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ, and do not be planning ahead for the desires of the flesh. A very important and interesting concept of not planning ahead for the desires of the flesh. In other words, we don't, you know, set up our whole week with the weekend in mind, for example. That shouldn't be our desire if we're people who are subject to a 5-day work week or whatever we are. But if we're not, of course, the same thing applies. We don't want to be planning ahead as though we think that our fleshly desires are the most important things of all. That shouldn't be what we're doing. We should be just conducting ourselves every day with the idea of doing what needs to be done, doing what is loving and doing what's right, doing what we have to do. Everything that we do every day, it's not always going to be burdensome at all. We're going to be finding out what we need to do to make life better for everybody, including ourselves, and we're trying to do that every day. That's what we're doing. We're trying to work at something good every day. Paul is mentioning that too. He says, keep doing good in verse 3, right? And then somebody will say, you did good work. Somebody who's in the government will even say, you're doing good work. Because the government is there for punishment of wrongdoers who break the law, for example. Most countries have laws where people get punished if they break the law, but the government's also there to praise people who do good works. And in many countries, Jehovah's Witnesses get praise from the government because of their preaching work and the favorable impact they have on people's lives, the positive impact. They get a lot of praise in many countries. That's not always true, of course. There are some countries in which Jehovah's Witnesses are treated very badly, and we see that as well. But the preaching work goes on because it's a good work, and whatever helps people is the work we have to do, whatever that is. That doesn't mean we are forced to break the law. That's not what Paul is saying here. He's saying obey the law. Don't oppose the government and the authority that's been given to them. He says be in subjection in verse 1. Conform to the law as much as is humanly possible, right? Conform to the law in the land in which you live. And that shouldn't stop you from doing God's work or from doing good work, which is definitely, it's God's work. By definition, God is love, and the word God means the most excellent, or the plural of excellence. So doing the best work possible is what it means to serve God and to worship God. So whatever we have to do from day to day, we might have to shop for food, so we do the best job we can shopping for food, so that we buy the best food we can buy that we're going to be able to enjoy eating, but also that's going to be beneficial for our health. We do all these things every day, whatever we need to do, whether it's putting the garbage out, you know, we want to do that with love, everything. There are duties from day to day. We have to do the duties that we're assigned in our lives, whatever they may be, right? As we get older, we may be given more responsibility, possibly, you know, and so on. And once we're no longer working, you know, once we're past the age where we work for a living, or if we're on a pension and we're not working day to day, then we still have the same requirement that we need to do. We need to do good. We need to do good. We need to be doing good. If we have more time to do it, then we should use that time to do good work, whatever it is. Some people retire very young. When their time is it? Oh, we're nearly done. Yes, we're nearly out of time. When I was about 35, I more or less retired from secular work because my wife was fairly wealthy and she was retired as well. So we both had a lot of time to do things. But I spent a lot of my time writing articles and researching. And trying to discover the history of the world. Once I realized that the Bible could help me to find the history of the world, then I decided I would work on that. And I did that for quite a number of years. 10 or more, 20, 15, what was it? 13 years at least, probably something like that, that I spent writing articles. But, I mean, everybody is given opportunities in life, right? And that was an opportunity for me, was to be able to work. And I wrote my songs, that's right, and recorded music also during the time. Well, that was earlier when I did that. Most of it was done. That was done from 1987 until early in the 2000s, I guess. And then I started writing articles. Our time is just about over, so it's October 1st, 2023. That's it for today for this video. I'm glad you were able to join us. I hope you're doing well. I hope you'll let me know how you are. And it's 21:25 hours Eastern Daylight Time, October 1st, 2023, as I mentioned. It's Ward Green saying, I love you. Have a wonderful day, evening, morning, whatever time it is where you live right now. And, yes, on my behalf, also, on my behalf, this is Hammy the Crow and Kazi, my Casio Digital Watch, saying bye for now.